In the beginning, marriage was established for companionship, for procreation, for sharing responsibilities. But with the fall came a disruption of the whole creation, including marriage. What is necessary for that to be restored? For Probe, I'm Larry Viverka, and I wish to welcome my conversation partners, Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology, and Aline Bauer, who is a guest lecturer in the School of Theology. Welcome to Probe.
Thank you, Larry.
Good to be here.
What do you understand the consequences of the fall to be? I suppose they include things like pain in childbirth, a lifetime of toil in order to produce adequate food, Eve being subject to her husband.
Whatever that means?
Well, is that a curse that somehow must remain with the human family now? And when we talk about restoration of the family, what do we mean? What are we talking about? What can we expect, given those consequences?
Well, I think we have to ask what the fall did to marriage if we're going to answer that question, Larry. And it seems to me that one of the most damaging things that sin did was put self on the throne. And therefore the whole of life is oriented to ourselves as human beings, and living happily in a family, in a marriage, calls for a constant warring against that tendency. So I would say the first challenge we face in restoring marriage toward its ideal is a battle against self, and that's true for everybody in that family structure.
Mm-hmm. Ellen White's statement, then, the battle with self is the greatest battle that we'll ever fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it begins there. What do we then understand the Holy Spirit's work or ministry, particularly as we understand the Holy Spirit as one who restores the lost image of God or recreates the lost image of God in human beings? What would be the impact then on marriage for that particular personal restoration?
Well, I think that's at the ground of the whole thing, is that if your own heart is not softened or remade by the working of the Holy Spirit, marriage is going to be a very rugged experience for you and for others, because you will be endeavoring to force acquiescence to your own interests and desires. I mean, all of us have enough of trouble on that own, even when our minds have been subdued by the working of the Holy Spirit, see. But, I wanted to push this a little bit, Larry and Aline, and notice that the whole idea of marriage is affected by the fall, in the sense that it brings about contention. The fall has brought about contention, and you asked a little bit earlier about how the fall may have affected the relationship of Adam and Eve, and there's that interesting a verse in Genesis that talks about, Eve was told that her husband would rule over her. And that sounds like almost like a mandate that has been given to Adam to rule over Eve. But I was intrigued some years ago to read that verse could actually have three possible meanings. One is that Adam would be a dominant personality, and Eve would, and he would then want to rule over her. The middle one escapes me right now, but it's similar to that. But the third one is the one that intrigued me the most, because this commentator was suggesting that verse could be understood that there's going to come into marriage a mutual drive for supremacy, that it's going to show up on both sides of the equation, and that selfishness is going to affect both men and women and create a dynamic where either one or the other, or both of them, are contending to have their way all the time. And I like that third interpretation. It seems to me to fit the picture the best of all.
Well, and as you look at that, I think we need to ask ourselves, and as I look at that text in Genesis, is God saying, this is what is my desire now that sin has entered? Or is God saying to Adam and Eve, this is the results of sin?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it leans more towards that. And I like your idea of itself. You know,
yeah.
Self takes charge, and then there's all sorts of problems.
And see, I think especially in traditional societies, when it comes to the issue of dominance, women are at a considerable disadvantage,
mm-hmm.
not only because men tend to be physically stronger, but also because they are disadvantaged in terms of dominance by pregnancy and childbirth and childcare, and also by the meeting of traditional needs to provide food and clothing. You know, whereas men were not encumbered by those things in traditional society. So it's very easy to see how men achieve dominance in traditional societies, given the selfish nature of humankind.
It's quite a challenge to confront that. Jesus, in Matthew 19, goes back to the Genesis, to quoting Genesis 2, where he talks about God's original intentions for marriage being a man leaving his father and mother and a man being united with his wife and a man and his wife becoming one. Are these somehow ideals that operate in the formation of marriages today? And to what extent do we see these as being a part of why couples marry?
Well, I think that they are ideals that we need to strive for. I think that especially for those who have heard and responded to the gospel, there is a mandate to try and move toward the Edenic model of marriage. And I'm intrigued by this, a man leaving his father and mother, and I've had people ask me, well, why doesn't it say that about the woman? And it's interesting, in a patriarchal marriage system, a woman was presumed to be leaving her father and mother when she got married. That was the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when she left that family, she surrendered the right or the privilege of ever returning there. So she was automatically absorbed by the husband's family. What's interesting here, this might even be a radical statement, that now, men, you need to make sure that you distance yourselves from your father and mother sufficiently to bond with your own wife and create your own family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we see that happening in the Old Testament stories, though, Dave?
Well, no, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in some cases
you. That's part of the problem, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, I'm not suggesting that this is saying that there should be nuclear families where you all go off and establish your own little nest. But I think that if the goal of marriage is the growing toward each other by a man and a woman, then whatever interferes with that is, in a sense, a violation of the pledge you made on the day you got married. And that could be that whether you're working two jobs, whether you're being harsh, whether you just give up. And so if you are so intertwined with your family and family structure that your spouse has no place to join and to bond with you, then I would say that you are violating the pledge you made on the day you got married.
And so the goal of this would be that third one, the man and wife becoming one, and
yeah.
anything that
yeah.
that hinders that then.
Yeah, and I think that mm-hmm. it's a growth in mutuality in all the spheres of life. Some people want to limit that to some kind of sexual activity, but the fact is that it's possible to bond deeply as friends in all spheres of life, and I think that's what has in mind there.
Mm-hmm. Again, that idea of the intimacy of close friendship that a husband and wife would share.
Now, Larry, I'd love to hear you talk about why people get married.
Well, there are there's a list that Norm Wright and his co-author Wes Roberts have written, and there's quite a list. One would be to spite parents, and
oh, that's
another
a good one.
Another to feel worthwhile and give meaning to life. Another might be to try to fix one's fiance, counseling him or her, trying to help the person to feel better about him or herself. Others may get married to overcome the fear that one might never get married, or to overcome the fear of independence that one needs to be with someone to feel safe or fulfilled, to ease the pain of a recent breakup, to care to take care of a fiance when one worries about breaking up with, even though it's obvious this marriage would never work. To escape an unhappy home, to take care of a pregnancy, or even to take care of the guilt from premarital sex. That's their list. Do you think of any others?
Well, I would just like to ask you, Larry, how many couples do you have to counsel who have entered marriage for one of those reasons?
Well, that it is occasionally a result of marital distress and people mm-hmm. discovering that their reasons for marrying were wrongly motivated, and then it is time to confront that and rework it through.
See, I wonder what some good reasons for getting married are.
Well, what do you see as perhaps good reasons?
Well, I think you said a little bit ago, friendship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enjoyment. We were created for intimacy, and by that I mean, you know, more than just the physical intimacy. We were created to be at one and feel at one with someone else, I think.
Yeah, so if you find a friend who has that same interest, that's not a bad reason for getting married.
That sense of mutuality.
Yeah.
Let's not forget for love.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, principled love, Larry.
Principled love.
Yeah.
And a conviction that that this is God's will and God leading in my life toward this individual. I think that is probably a good reason as well. Restoration, the concept that what went wrong originally can, through the work and the recreative efforts of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit upon the life, the recreation of the capacity to love, to care deeply for another human being, as accomplished by God, with the ideals of mutuality, of forgiveness, of friendship that sees us through all kinds of difficulties. These are the things we look for and hold to as we anticipate the work of restoration. I want to thank my conversation partners, Dave Thomas and Aline Bauer, for our conversation today, and for Susan Michael, who has guided us through the program engineering process. For Probe, this is Larry Viverka.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.